possible before he rejoins his regiment.
I see.
You seem troubled.
Well, I cannot help noticing that he takes a great deal of notice of Miss Thorpe.
You are not the only person to observe that.
But is there not some way he can be reminded of Miss Thorpe's engagement to my brother?
My brother is perfectly aware of it.
He does not know the pain he is giving my brother.
Is it my brother's attentions to Miss Thorpe or Miss Thorpe's admission of them that gives the pain?
Is it not the same thing?
No man is offended by another man's admiration of the woman he loves. It is the woman only who can make that a torment.
Isabella means no harm. Could not the general speak to Captain Tilney?
Would your brother thank you for supposing that Miss Thorpe's affection is only to be secured by her seeing nothing of Captain Tilney?
I suppose not.
Morning, Miss Morland. Ready to go, I see. What a confounded racket. I see the old man has put himself in charge of manoeuvres. Morning, sister.
Frederick, have you had any breakfast yet?
Couldn't look at it.
Oh, so you've decided to favour us, I see.
Oh, Lord.
I do not complain for myself or your brother and sister, but I believe some courtesy is owed to our guest. Miss Morland, you must excuse this son of mine.
I am up now and will see you to the carriage.
Pray do not bother. We shall see ourselves off.
How glad I shall be when you are all gone. He makes my head ache.
Oh, shh. Frederick.
The clock struck 10. The hour of departure arrived. The general accompanied his son in a curricle, while Catherine and Eleanor were in a chaise and four, with postillions so magnificently liveried and numerous outriders properly mounted, that Catherine caught her last view of Bath without regret.
I confess I will miss Bath. I shall remember it always.
Are you not glad to be returning to Northanger Abbey?
I have been much alone there. For some years it has just been our father and me.
You must miss your mother very much.
We all felt her loss greatly.
I cannot imagine what it would be like to lose my mother.
It has been good to be in Bath. It was cheerful to meet new people. Henry was happy there. And so was I.
Their journey was broken by a 2-hour stay at Petit France. Had their party been perfectly agreeable, the delay would have been nothing. But General Tilney seemed always a check upon his children's spirits. At last, the order for release was given.
Come along, come along. Don't linger, Eleanor.
Yes.
Miss Morland, perhaps you'd care to ride with my son in the curricle for the rest of the journey,
With Mr. Tilney?
Well, the day is fine, and I wish you to see as much of the countryside as possible.
Her remembrance of Mr. Allen's opinion respecting young men's open carriages made her blush at the mention of such a plan.
Only if it is agreeable to you, Miss Morland.
Her first thought was to decline, but her second was of deference for General Tilney's judgment.
I should like it very much.
Henry drove so well, without parading to her or swearing at the horses. To be driven by him, next to dancing with him, was certainly the greatest happiness in the world.
We are not more than a few miles off now.
I long to see the Abbey.
You have formed a very favourable idea of it.
Well, is it not a fine old place?
It is. If you have a stout heart and nerves fit for sliding panels and tapestry.
Oh, I do not think I should be so easily frightened, because there would be so many people in the house.
Certainly. But you must be aware that when a young lady is introduced into a dwelling of this kind, she's always lodged apart from the rest of the family. She's taken by Dorothy, the ancient housekeeper, along many gloomy passages, into an apartment never used since some cousin or kin died in it. Can you stand such a ceremony as this?
But this will not happen to me, I am sure.
Dorothy, meanwhile, just to lift your spirits, tells you that the part of the abbey you inhabit is haunted.
Oh, Mr. Tilney, how frightful! Oh, this is just like a book. I am sure your housekeeper is not really Dorothy. Well, what then?
You will get a few hours' unquiet slumber before you are woken by a violent storm. Peals of thunder so loud as to seem to shake the edifice to its foundation.
Go on.
You discover a division in the tapestry, so artfully constructed as to defy the minutest inspection. Behind it is a door, only secured by massy bars and a padlock. Making short work of these, you will enter a small vaulted room.
Oh, I should be too much frightened to do any such thing.
What? Not when Dorothy has given you to understand that there is a secret underground passage between your apartment and the chapel of St. Anthony, scarcely 2 miles off. Could you shrink from so simple an adventure? You proceed through vaulted rooms without perceiving anything out of the way. A dagger, a few drops of blood, some ancient instrument of torture, and a cabinet inlaid with ebony and gold.
Oh, what is in it?
Are you sure you can face it?
Yes. I have already seen the dagger and the implement of torture.
Very well. It is a large roll of paper, containing many sheets of manuscript, but scarcely have you been able to decipher, "Oh, thou, whomsoever thou mayst be, into whose hands these memoirs of the wretched Matilda may fall," when your lamp suddenly expires, leaving you in total darkness.
Oh, no, no, do not say so. Well, go on.
I cannot for the moment. We are approaching Northanger Abbey.
Where?
You cannot see it from the road. It is set in the valley. We must hurry before the rain picks up.
A sudden scud of rain driving full into her face made it impossible for her to observe anything further, and she fixed all her thoughts on the welfare of her new straw bonnet. She passed through the gates without one feeling of foreboding or a moment's suspicion of past scenes of horror.
Well, Miss Morland, you like what you see. Has none of the grandeur of, say, my good friend Lord Mount Eagle's residence, but I dare say it'll serve well enough. Ah, here's your friend Eleanor to show you to your room.
Eleanor, I think you'll find Miss Morland has a pretty good idea of the sort of room reserved for her.
Miss Tilney would never put me into such a chamber as you have described.
What nonsense have you been talking, Henry?
Ignore my brother's teasing, Miss Morland. I am sure you will find your room pleasant.
Now, it wants 5:20. Dinner is to be on the table at 5:00, mind you, Eleanor. I will not suffer any delays.
Yes, Father. Come, Catherine. We must make haste.
A moment's glance was enough to satisfy Catherine that her apartment was very unlike the one Henry had described. It was by no means unreasonably large, and contained neither tapestry or velvet. As she changed her costume, her eye suddenly fell on a large high chest, standing back in a recess by the fireplace. She advanced and examined it closely. It was made of cedar, curiously inlaid with some darker wood.
Eleanor!
Remembering that she must not be late, she retreated.
Eleanor! Eleanor!
Her eye was drawn back to the chest. The lock was silver. At each end were the imperfect remains of handles, broken perhaps from some strange violence. On the centre of the lid was a mysterious cipher.
How strange it is!
Her fearful curiosity was growing greater. Her toilette seemed so nearly finished that the impatience of her curiosity might safely be indulged.
Did you want to use the chest?
Oh,
It is not much use because it is so difficult to open and close. Come, Catherine. Father will fret if we are late. We must hurry.
Tomorrow, we'll show you the rest of the abbey and the grounds, if the storm lets up. The gardens, I may say, I'm pleased with. Oh, there are others that are bigger and more impressive. Mr. Allen's are extensive, I imagine.
I'm not sure. I think so.
Now, as to the house, some of the rooms would seem large to many, Miss Morland. But I'm sure you're used to better-sized apartments at Mr. Allen's.
No, indeed. Mr. Allen's dining parlour is not half as large.
Oh, really? Upon my honour. I believe there might be more comfort in rooms only half their size, eh, Eleanor?
Yes, Father.
Still, we have these rooms and we must use them. But I have ordered extensive improvements.
It is not what I expected.
Really? Where's that?
I think, Father, this being an abbey, Miss Morland quite reasonably thought the rooms might be of more antiquity.
Oh. Young women these days have a taste for the picturesque, which I will never understand. I prefer comfort to decay. Man can always improve on nature.
By the time the party broke up, the storm had risen. Catherine mounted the stairs to her room. She listened to the tempest with sensations of awe. And when she heard it rage round the corner of the ancient building, she felt for the first time that she really was in an abbey.
Good night, Catherine. I'm glad you're here.
Good night, Eleanor.
Mm-hmm. As she was beginning to think of stepping into bed, she was struck by the appearance of a high, old-fashioned cabinet. She remembered Henry's words earlier that day.
A dagger, a few drops of blood, some ancient instrument of torture, and a cabinet inlaid with ebony and gold.
It was not absolutely ebony and gold, but it was Japan. Black and yellow of the handsomest kind.
Are you sure you can face it?
I have already seen the dagger and the implement of torture.
Placing the candle with great caution on a chair, she seized the key with a tremulous hand and tried to turn it. It resisted her utmost strength. She tried it another way. The bolt flew open, and she eagerly searched the rows of drawers. In the final drawer, her quick eyes lit on a roll of paper pushed back into the further part of the cavity. As she seized it, a gust of wind blew out her candle.
Oh, thou, whomsoever thou mayst be, into whose hands these memoirs of the wretched Matilda may fall.
A lamp could not have expired with more awful effect. The manuscript fell from her hand, and groping her way to the bed, she jumped hastily in and sought some suspension of agony by creeping far underneath the clothes. The storm still raged, and various were the noises. The very curtains of the bed seemed at one moment in motion, and at another, the lock of the door was agitated, as by the attempt of somebody to enter.
In episode 2 of Northanger Abbey, Jane Austen was played by Amanda Root, Catherine by Emily Wachter, and Henry by David Harewood. General Tilney was played by John Shrapnel, Eleanor by Saskia Reeves, and Isabella by Claire Skinner. Mrs. Allen was played by Julia McKenzie, and Mr. Allen by John Rowe. Mrs. Thorpe was played by Jenny Agutter, and John Thorpe by Jonathan Keeble. James was played by Shiv Greywall, and Frederick by Harry Myers. Northanger Abbey was written by Jane Austen and dramatised by Dominic Power. The composer was Peter Weigold, and the director was Pam Fraser-Solomon. Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen. Dramatised for radio by Dominic Power. Episode 3.
Catherine awoke to objects of cheerfulness at 7 o'clock the next day. Her fire was already burning, and a bright morning had succeeded the tempest of the night. With the return of consciousness, she remembered the mysterious manuscript from the night before. Springing from her bed, she gathered the scattered sheets from the floor.
2 shirts, 4 pair stockings, 3 cravats. To poultice chestnut mare, 1 guinea.
An inventory of linen and a farrier's bill. This was the collection of papers which had filled her with expectation and alarm, and robbed her of half a night's rest. How could she have so imposed upon herself? Heaven forbid that Henry Tilney should ever know of her folly. Finding nobody about, she slipped out of the front of the house and walked some distance in order to see Northanger Abbey entire. Catherine was struck beyond her expectation by the grandeur of the abbey as she saw it for the first time from the lawn.
Miss Morland!
Mr. Tilney, good morning.
Good morning. Oh, a restful night at Northanger, I trust?
Yes, very.
The storm did not disturb you at all?
Oh, why do you ask?
Well, the first night in a strange house can be unsettling.
It is a charming morning now. Storms and sleeplessness are nothing when they are over.
Very true. You are admiring the building.
Mm. I did not see it properly when we arrived yesterday.
And is it everything you expected?
Yes.
Oh, you are not quite sure.
No, oh, I am. At least I am now. Viewed from here, it seems ancient. Just like the abbeys one has read about.
But inside it is perhaps insufficiently gloomy?
Yes, that's right. Oh, I mean, it is very nice.
I see the problem. An abbey, by its very name, suggests brooding antiquity. Unfortunately, my father has a passion for comfort and modernity that you must surely censure.
Oh, no. I am sure your father is right. It is just so very different from what I expected.
You will find in time that Northanger has its fair share of secrets.
I cannot tell if you are teasing me.
Morning, Catherine. Henry.
Eleanor.
It's nearly 8 o'clock and our father is waiting.
One thing you can rely on in Northanger Abbey is the unvarying punctuality of our meal times.
Over here. Some bread for Miss Morland.
Sir.
Now, this bread is baked in the French style. I believe you'll find it lighter than your English loaf.
Thank you.
Yes.
What would you like to do today, Catherine? There are some very pretty walks. Or perhaps you prefer to explore the Abbey.
Oh, the Abbey, please.
Miss Morland, your opinion here, if you please, in the manner of our china. I chose it myself, but we old soldiers may not be the best judges of what'll be pleasing to the eye of a fashionable young lady.
It is very elegant.
Elegant. That's your verdict. Your opinion gives me great encouragement. I would imagine you learned the value of good china at Fullerton.
No, indeed. I never saw anything half so fine at home.
My principle, I will confess, is neatness and simplicity. It is right, I believe, to encourage the manufacture in our own country. Now, to my uncritical palate, that tea is as well flavoured for being drunk from the clay of Staffordshire as that of Dresden or Sèvres. Would you not say so? Of course, manufacture has improved over the last couple of years. When I was last in town, I saw some much superior specimens. And who can say? It may not be too long before a happy event may give me the pleasure of selecting a set for someone other than myself. Henry, you should not delay your journey to Woodston.
I did not know you were leaving.
I go for 2 days only. Parish business requires my presence.
You're not informed our guest. That's very bad. I cannot abide such a casual attitude.
Oh, I would not wish to keep Mr. Tilney from his parish.
That does you credit. I should explain about my son's parish. The property is chiefly my own, and I take care that it not be a bad one. Did Henry's income depend solely on this living, he would not be ill provided for. Would it interest you to see it?
Oh, yes. I would like that very much.
Take note of that, Henry. You may think it odd that I should insist on a profession for my son. There are times, such as this, when we could all wish him free from every tie of business. The money is nothing. Employment is the thing. Now you take Frederick, my eldest son. Now he will perhaps inherit as considerable a landed property as any private man in the country. Yet he's serving his country with distinction as a soldier. And that is how it should be.
Indeed, Father. So, sadly, I must take my leave of you, Miss Morland, and return to my parish duties.
Could you not go tomorrow?
Well, if I go today, I shall be back
sooner. He's to go. There's no point in delaying. It looks uncommonly like indecision. Then fuss over him, Eleanor. It's all decided.
Goodbye, Miss Morland.
Goodbye, Mr. Tilney. Yeah.
Now, Miss Morland, how can we divert you?
I should very much like to see the Abbey.
Excellent choice. Excellent. I promise myself the pleasure of showing you the improvements I've made, but sadly I have no leisure to do so at present.
Perhaps I could show Miss Morland around.
No, that would not do. It's better that she see the Abbey when I can conduct her myself. Now, I think I detect in Miss Morland's eyes a judicious desire to view the gardens before the rains return.
There is no need, I assure
you. No, it's no trouble. Eleanor will attend to it.
I believe it will be wisest to do that before the weather breaks.
That's settled, then. You must show Miss Morland the new greenhouses and the improvements to the kitchen garden.
Yes, Father.
She'll wish to compare them with those of Mr. Allen. See to it, Eleanor.
Yes, Father.
Catherine did not exactly know how this was to be understood. General Tilney's change of plan. Why was there such unwillingness on the General's side to allow her the freedom to explore the Abbey without his supervision? She was all impatience to see the house and had scarcely any curiosity about the gardens.
Is it inconvenient for your father to show me around?
Do not be uneasy on my father's account. He's very fixed in his habits and he prefers to show visitors around himself. You are obliging him by falling in with his wishes.
He sometimes speaks quite harshly to you.
A little, perhaps. He likes everything to be just so. He seems very pleased that you're here. I'm sure he's glad that I have a companion. There's the kitchen garden. Shall we go and see it?
Oh, we could do. But to say the truth, I have never really cared for a kitchen garden.
No more do I. And over here are the greenhouses. Perhaps you'd be interested in a favourite walk of mine. Though I'm afraid it may be a bit damp after the night's rain.
That doesn't matter.
Eleanor led them towards a narrow winding path through a thick grove of old Scotch firs. And Catherine, struck by its gloomy aspect, was eager to enter it.
General Tilney does not care for this walk, perhaps.
No, he avoids it.
I like this. It is more picturesque and old than anything we have seen this morning.
My mother used to love it. I came here with her as a child. Be careful of those brambles.
Oh,
are you all right?
Oh, I'm caught.
Well, let me help. There. Better?
Much better. Oh, I like this walk better than all the rest of the gardens. I wonder that your father did not do something about it.
I am afraid that father is set against it. He has given the gardeners instructions that it is not to be touched.
Catherine's interest in the deceased Mrs. Tilney grew with each new revelation. Of her unhappiness in marriage, she felt persuaded. The general had certainly been an unkind husband. He did not love her walk. Could he therefore have loved her?
You must miss her very much.
I believe she would have been a good influence on all of us.
On your father?
Yes, on father too. Perhaps I should explain my father's displeasure. You may have already heard something of the matter.
No, indeed.
Do you know the Lockwood family?
No.
Their son, Frank, became very attached to me while we were in Bath. My father was very much against him.
Did you care for him?
Yes. But father felt the match was unsuitable. It is the reason we left Bath early.
I remember Isabella did say something about it before we left, but I did not credit it at the time.
I believe there was common talk for a while. It made me very uncomfortable.
Your father seems very harsh.
Do not think so. He believes he is acting for the best in the absence of my mother. But I believe she would have understood.
Was she a very charming woman?
Yes, very.
Is there a picture of her?
There is only one. It was meant for the drawing room, but my father was dissatisfied with it. I keep it in my bedroom now. Oh, we must go back. Father is ready for us.
Good Lord, Eleanor, where have you been? In a jungle?
We looked at the gardens.
Which part of the gardens, exactly? Eleanor, how do you account for your appearance? Was there a mutiny of the estate workers?
I showed her the old fir grove.
Why did you do such a thing? This has been a wasted morning for our guests.
I'm sorry, Father.
Well, come along, come along. May as well begin our tour of the house. Not leisure for any further delays. My apologies, Miss Morland. This is your fault, Eleanor.
As General Tilney led the way across the hall, through the common drawing room and one useless antechamber after another, Catherine could no longer hide from herself the nature of her feelings.
Now, Miss Morland, observe, if you will, the workmanship of the hangings over that window. I had them made last year.
What had been terror and dislike before was now absolute aversion. Yes, aversion. His cruelty to Eleanor and his late wife made him odious to her. She had often read of such tyrants.
Lord Drumgool commandeered these apartments when he last visited. And perhaps they'd suit friends from Fullerton, should they favour us with a visit.
The costliness or elegance of any room's fitting up could be nothing to her. She cared for no furniture of a more modern date than the 15th century.
Catherine, come this way a moment.
Helena, where do you suppose you're going now?
I just thought...
You just thought? We've been exhausting Miss Morland and you seek to prolong it. Do you not think your friend might like some refreshment at this point? It's nearly 11 o'clock.
Where were we going?
I was going to take you into what was my mother's room. The room in which she died.
After we've refreshed ourselves, we shall look at the new offices. You'll find much of interest in their refurbishment.
The day's tour of Northanger Abbey was succeeded by an evening, the little variety and length of which made Catherine peculiarly sensible of Henry's importance among them. As Catherine and Eleanor sat together, General Tilney restlessly paced the room.
Your father seems very agitated tonight.
Oh, he often walks about the room in this way. It's nothing unusual.
It remains as it was, I suppose.
What does?
Your mother's room.
Oh, yes, my father has not refurbished it.
And how long ago did you say since your mother died?
She has been dead these 9 years.
9 years, Catherine knew, was a trifle of time, compared with what generally elapsed after the death of an injured wife, before her room was put to rights.
You were with her, I suppose, to the last?
No. I was unfortunately from home. Her illness was sudden and short, and before I arrived it was all over.
Catherine's blood ran cold with the horrid suggestions which naturally sprang from these words. Could it be possible? Could Henry's father... Watching him slowly pacing the length of the room with downcast eyes, her suspicions were reinforced.
I should so like to see your mother's picture.
Oh, I shall show it to you tomorrow.
And her bedroom?
That too.
What pretty mischief are you two planning together?
Nothing, Father.
Well, I can never believe that when two young ladies are in close conference. Eleanor, be mindful Miss Morland might wish to retire.
Yes, Father.
Sadly, I have many pressing duties before I can close my eyes. And I may be poring over the affairs of the nation for hours after you're asleep.
His constant agitated pacing plainly spoke the gloomy workings of a mind not, in its fearful review of past scenes of guilt, wholly dead to humanity. The following afternoon, while General Tilney was out of the way, Eleanor made good her promise, taking Catherine to her room to show her the portrait of the late Mrs. Tilney.
She's lovely.
It was painted in the year before she died.
But why does your father not hang it in the main house?
You need not whisper.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that
my father found fault with the workmanship. He did not think the representation good enough.
Do you think so?
No. No, I think it captures her very well. She's just as I remembered her. I often fancy she's still with us.
Do you? How interesting.
Would you like to see her room now?
Very much. Will not your father mind?
Why should he?
Well, he seemed reluctant that we should go there yesterday.
I'm sure there can be no harm in you seeing it.
Catherine's excitement as they entered the great gallery was too much for any endeavour at discourse. She could only look at her companion.
Oh, calm yourself.
Who is it?
It may be my father.
Well, I thought he was busy.
Eleanor! Eleanor!
Yes, Father? Excuse me, Catherine.
Catherine saw her friend disappear with her father. She did not wait, but ran for safety to her own room. She stayed there an hour, in the greatest agitation, deeply commiserating the state of her poor friend. She began to imagine scenes of horror that Eleanor must be enduring at the remorseless and tyrannical hands of a father who had hitherto shown himself dead to feeling. The sound of a horse coming towards the abbey allowed her the hope that deliverance would come in the shape of Henry Tilney.
Catherine? Catherine?
Eleanor! Oh, Eleanor, are you all right?
Yes, I'm quite all right. Only Father is anxious that we should not be late starting dinner.
I am sent to fetch you.
I heard a horse. I wondered if perhaps your brother had returned from his parish.
Oh, no, that was my father's steward. I don't like to hurry you, Catherine.
I will be down as quickly as I can.
Helena!
Is your father very displeased?
Helena!
Oh, dear Catherine, I may not talk now. Please do not delay coming down. Father's temper is uncertain today.
The drawing room gave every appearance of normality. General Tilney greeted her in his customary complimentary style, which so well concealed his resentful ire as to make her feel secure of her life for the present.
An old soldier such as I now understands how it was you captured Bath without benefit of artillery. Some more wine?
No, thank you.
I fear life at Northanger has proved fatiguing for you. Eleanor tells me you've remained in your room throughout the afternoon.
I'm sure Miss Morland has her reasons.
My daughter's been out of spirits lately. Perhaps that not provide the lively companionship that might make your stay here enjoyable.
No, indeed. I am very happy in Eleanor's company.
Your benevolence to your friend does you credit, as always. Now, shall we go through to dinner?
Throughout that night, Catherine thought of Mrs. Tilney's room and the General's apparent dread of it. Could it contain some proofs of the General's cruelty? Perhaps some fragments of the journal, continued by Mrs. Tilney to the last gasp? By the morning, she had determined that she must try for the room again, and that this time Eleanor should know nothing of the matter. To involve her in a second detection could not be the office of a friend. At 4 o'clock, an opportunity presented itself. It meant her retiring to dress half an hour earlier than usual and using the time to make her way to the forbidden gallery.
Oh!
She beheld what fixed her to the spot and agitated every feature.
Oh, how stupid! Stupid!
Astonishment and doubt first seized her, and a shortly succeeding ray of common sense added bitter emotions of shame. The apartment, to which she had given a date so ancient, a position so awful, proved to be a bright, well-proportioned, modern apartment. She could not be mistaken in the room, but how grossly mistaken in everything else.
Oh, you...
Miss Morland, are you all right?
What are you doing here?
I am back a day early, that is all.
In this part of the abbey?
It is the nearest way from the stable yard to my room. This room does not usually feature in my father's grand tour of the abbey.
No.
Yet you wanted to visit it.
I wanted to see your mother's room.
Ah. Is there anything extraordinary to be seen here? You look pale. I'm afraid I alarmed you, coming upon you without warning. Perhaps you did not know this part of the house was in common use.
No, I did not. You have had a fine day for your ride, I hope.
Very, thank you. I'm surprised Eleanor has not brought you here before.
Oh, she was going to, but only your father discovered us.
And that prevented you?
Well, I thought he seemed displeased.
He does not care for this part of the abbey. Have you looked into all the rooms in this passage?
No. I must go and dress for dinner.
It is only 4:15. We're not in Bath now. I imagine Eleanor has talked to you about our mother a great deal.
That is, no, not much. But what she did say was very interesting.
Interesting? In what way?
Her dying so suddenly, and you, none of you, being at home. And your father, I thought perhaps he had not been very fond of her.
And from this you suspect some negligence on his part? Or perhaps something worse?
I don't know what I think.
My mother's death was sudden, but her illness was one from which she had often suffered. Her physician, a very respectable man, was in constant attendance. Frederick and I were both at home and saw her receive every possible attention. Eleanor was away from home. If she had been here, I believe it would have been easier for her in later years.
But your father, was he afflicted?
For a time. Greatly so. He loved her. I will not pretend that while she lived, he was always kind and considerate. But if his temper injured her, his judgment never did.
Oh, I am very glad of it. It would have been very shocking.
If I understand you rightly, you had formed such a surmise of horrors. Miss Morland, Catherine, you must put this out of your mind. Remember the country and the age in which we live. Is this likely? Could such atrocities be perpetrated without being known in a society where every man is surrounded by a neighbourhood of voluntary spies, eager to inform, where roads and newspapers lay everything open?
I'm sorry.
What were you thinking of?
I must go.
Catherine! Wait!
The visions of romance were over. Henry's address, short as it had been, had thoroughly opened her eyes to the extravagance of her late fancies. Her folly, which now seemed even criminal, was all exposed to him, and he must despise her forever.
Catherine?
Yes?
We have been worried about you. Won't you come down?
I'm sorry.
Well, Henry said you were out of sorts when he saw you earlier. Do you not think it would be better if you came down to supper?
Yes. I will be down in a minute.
The absurdity and curiosity of her fears, could they ever be forgotten? He had, she thought, once or twice before today, shown something like affection for her. But now...
Come soon. You know how Father frets about punctuality at mealtimes.
In short, she made herself as miserable as possible before going down to supper, where, as if to mock her suspicions, General Tilney greeted her with a fusillade of compliments. After dinner, alone with Henry and Catherine, she struggled to conceal her shame.
Catherine, you hardly ate at all at supper. We are worried that you are pining for home.
It is not that, truly.
Be that as it may, Eleanor and I have snatched a moment before supper to plan a regime of recuperation.
It is very kind of you, I'm sure.
You are entitled to more enjoyment than Northanger Abbey has so far afforded you. We have elected to be your physicians, and we prescribe a holiday from official tours of the Abbey and all its improvements. That would be a start. You see, Eleanor, it is working already.
Ah, well, you have not asked what Catherine would like to do.
Well, Catherine, how do you decide?
I think I should like it very much.
There. We all agreed. We will spend the evening thinking of ways to enjoy ourselves.
That night, Catherine was able to acknowledge that her spirits were at least raised to a modest tranquillity. She could not forget or defend what had passed. It seemed as if the whole might be traced to the influence of that sort of reading she indulged in Bath. Her mind made up on these several points, and her resolution formed of always judging and acting in future with the greatest good sense, she had nothing left to do but to forgive herself and be happy once again.
Catherine, you have a visitor.
A visitor? Who?
It is your brother.
James? Where is he?
He would not come in. He's waiting by the front door. I believe he has something important to tell you.
Call on us if there's anything we can do.
Hello, Catherine.
James, what is it? You look dreadful.
Do I? Well, it is no matter.
Nothing is wrong with our mother or father.
Not that I know of.
Tell me what is wrong. You are frightening me.
I wish you'd never set eyes on this cursed family.
The Tilneys? What can you mean?
I have come here to tell you that it is all over.
Oh, what is over?
Everything. Everything is at an end between Miss Thorpe and me. I left her in Bath yesterday.
How did this happen?
I cannot go into particulars. Why should I cause you pain? I was foolish enough to believe my affection was returned. Well, that is over. I am undeceived and there is an end of it.
James, what has caused this?
You will know soon enough from another quarter. Indeed, I wish your visit here will be over soon. Certainly before Captain Tilney makes his engagement known, or you will be uncomfortably circumstanced.
Isabella and Captain Tilney?
Her duplicity hurts me more than all. Right to the very end, she told me she was as much attached to me as ever.
Have you told our parents?
No.
Well, they must be told.
I know they must, but I cannot face them. After Father's consent was so kindly given, how can I see them again? Kitty, you are the only friend I have left.
But what will you do?
I cannot go back to Oxford.
I shall go to London. At least it has no associations with Isabella. There I may lose myself.
You will not do any such thing. If you leave Oxford, you will disappoint our parents as much as Isabella has disappointed you. Please, let us go indoors, James. You must stay the night.
No, I'm not ready to face Captain Tilney's family yet. For the rest, I will be guided by you. You are a rock, Kitty. Your love I do build upon.
Is your brother staying?
No. He is not able to.
No bad news from Fullerton, I hope. Your mother and father and the rest of your family. I hope they are none of them ill.
No, I thank you. They are all very well.
Oh, that is good news, at least.
Yes, it is.
But your brother's visit has upset you.
It has upset me more than I can say. Poor James is so unhappy. You will soon know why.
Dear Catherine, you must tell us what is the matter.
But I cannot. But I must ask you, if your brother should be coming here, you will give me notice of it, so that I may go away.
You wish to leave if Frederick comes here?
Yes. I am sure I would be very sorry to leave you so soon. Something dreadful has happened, and I cannot be in the same house with Captain Tilney.
Would this have anything to do with your friend, Miss Thorpe?
I did not think you would have guessed it so soon. Mm. When we talked of it in Bath, you did not think it would end so. It is very shocking.
How has it ended exactly?
Isabella has deserted my brother to marry yours.
Oh, Catherine, that cannot be.
I am very sorry to hear that anyone you love should be unhappy, but I do not think a betrothal between my brother and your friend is likely.
You should have seen James. It must be true.
I don't say that you are deceived, or that your brother is, but Miss Thorpe may very well be.
Henry, is it possible?
Are her family wealthy?
Not very. But that will not matter to your father.
Why is that?
I have often heard him say that he only valued money because it allowed him to provide for his children's happiness.
Ah.
Would it be to promote his happiness to allow him to marry such a girl? She must be unprincipled to use your brother so.
Oh, cheer up, Catherine. It may be that your brother has had a lucky escape. You may have to accept a new sister-in-law, Eleanor. Open, candid, artless, guileless, with affection strong but simple, forming no pretensions and knowing no disguise.
I would welcome such a sister-in-law.
And in the meantime, you must contend with Miss Thorpe.
Henry.
I think that we have neglected a promise to Miss Morland.
What is that, sir?
To show her your parsonage at Woodston.
Should you like to see it?
Oh, yes, very much.
Well, we shall call on you.
That is a delightful idea.
Well, when may I look forward to this pleasure?
Oh, we're entirely at your disposal, are we not, Miss Morland? When would suit?
I must be.
Well, we'll take our chance then, Henry. No need to fix. I may not do Monday, as I expect my surveyor that day. Tuesday, I must attend the club. It's expected on me, Miss Morland. Thursday, I'm in London. Would Wednesday be agreeable?
Oh, any day will suit me.
Wednesday it is, then. You're not to put yourself out, Henry. Whatever you happen to have in the house will be enough.
Oh, that is so very good of you, sir.
Well, 2¾ hours will carry us to Woodston, I suppose. We shall be in the carriage by 10, Eleanor. No later, mind. At 1:15 on Wednesday, you may look for us.
I shall be delighted, sir.
Now I must leave you. The estate has its responsibilities. Miss Morland, enjoy your day.
I must bid you farewell.
Where are you going?
To frighten my housekeeper out of her wits. No time must be lost in getting the place ready.
But how can you think such a thing after what the General said? When he so particularly desired you not to give yourself any trouble. I mean, he made such a point of it.
Nevertheless, it would be wise for me to go.
Eleanor, you must persuade him.
No, perhaps Henry is right. We must find ways to amuse ourselves in his absence.
I will have to make some sacrifices, Miss Morland, before Wednesday's expedition is achieved.
Wednesday seems such a long way away.
Well, we're not comparing it with Fullerton and Northanger. I mean, we're considering it as a mere parsonage. Small and confined, we allow, but decent, perhaps, and habitable. But you may judge for yourself. We are almost there.
This is a charming village, is it not, Eleanor?
You find it charming. Perhaps it is. Not as picturesque as Fullerton, perhaps, but, well, certainly it shows well in this spring weather. Oh, look, Miss Morland, there is the parsonage.
Oh, and there is Henry, waiting for us.
Now, I believe, Miss Morland, you will find there are few country parsonages in England half so good as this one. It may admit of improvement. Henry knows little of how to make the best of the place. Well, the beef's quite good, by the way. A little overcooked. No, it lacks the discrimination of taste that a young lady would bring to it.
What, the beef?
No, the house, the grounds, everything.
I think it perfect as it is.
Well, that must give us some encouragement.
Oh, Eleanor, the apple trees remind me of Fullerton.
I would love to visit Fullerton.
Now, we finish our meal by 3. That should just give us enough time for Miss Morland to explore the house to her heart's content.
If you would like that, Miss Morland.
Oh, I would. I would.
Just like no.
Miss Morland, if you had a free hand here, what improvements would you make, huh?
Oh, I cannot rightly say. I like it as it is.
Yes, yes, but there are touches you would add. Small details of taste that would transform these rooms, Make them your own. This room need not detain us. It's sadly dilapidated at present.
Oh, no. It is the prettiest room in the world. If it was my house, I should never sit anywhere else. What a delightful view. And look at that dear little cottage.
Oh, you like the cottage. Henry, remember that. The cottage remains.
Yes, Father.
Come, Eleanor. We must leave Miss Morland to enjoy this room.
Yes, Father.
Keep her company, Henry.
Yes, Father.
Oh, it is truly a charming room.
And dusty, though I often use it.
You should do something with it.
Perhaps now I will.
I am glad of it. And I am glad we came here. Woodston is a very good place.
It is good enough.
Oh, it is more than that. I don't know when I have liked a parsonage half so much.
From among the great many you have known?
Well, I may not have great experience, but I have lived in a parsonage all my life, so I know something about them.
I accept your just rebuke. Woodston is my home now. If the truth were told, I prefer it to Northanger Abbey.
Oh, so do I. A few weeks ago I would have thought an abbey the grandest thing in the world. I expected it to be old and mysterious.
The abbey let you down, that is all.
I was even deluded by my own vanity into thinking your father to be a great villain. You have been so kind not to mention it.
What is your opinion of my father now?
He has shown me great kindness, and I am grateful for it.
Catherine, my father is a man of sudden enthusiasms. Few of them last any length of time.
Oh, I see.
I am sorry, that sounds ill-tempered and rude. Any person of understanding must admire and esteem you.
But I have been wrong in what I believed.
In one instance only. For the rest, your judgment is based unfailingly on your own good nature.
That afternoon they left Woodston, and the next day General Tilney found himself obliged to go to London. His departure gave Catherine the first experimental conviction that a loss can sometimes be a gain. For the next 2 days, Catherine and Eleanor passed the time in perfect happiness. Every employment voluntary, every laugh indulged, every meal a scene of ease and good humour.
Catherine, can you keep a secret?
No, I don't think I can.
Oh, don't say that. For if you cannot, then I cannot tell you my news. And I'm dying to.
I'm very good at keeping secrets, really.
Oh, I hope so. If my father finds out, he'll be furious.
Well, what can it be?
Frank Lockwood has written to me.
No.
I had the letter this morning. He sent it under cover of my maid Alice.
How clever of him.
He writes that he misses me. What am I to do?
The General has been in better humour recently. Perhaps he will learn to like Mr. Lockwood.
I do not think he will ever change his mind about poor Frank.
Oh, who can that be?
Frederick is the only person who would arrive unannounced.
I shall go to my room. I am not yet ready to meet Captain Tilney.
I am sorry, Captain. He has not behaved well.
Good heavens, Eleanor. What can be the matter?
It is not Frederick. It is my father, back from London.
I know, I could hear. You look so dreadfully upset.
Oh, Catherine, you must not. You must not indeed.
Is it so very bad?
I don't know how to begin. I am so wretched.
Is it a message from Woodston? Something has happened to your brother?
No. That is not it, thank heaven. But it is bad enough. You will despise me. You have every reason to.
Oh, Eleanor, I never could. You must tell me what has passed between you and your father. He is displeased at
something. My dear Catherine, we are to part.
Part? When?
My father has recollected an engagement that takes our whole family away on Monday. I'm so sorry.
I can finish my visit here at any time. Or perhaps you will come to me at Fullerton.
Oh, it is not in my power, Catherine.
Come when you can, then. You must not worry. I can go on Monday very well.
My father has fixed your leaving tomorrow morning. He has ordered a carriage to be here at 7 o'clock. No servant will be offered you.
But why?
I do not know. I could hardly believe my senses when I heard it. What will your father and mother say? When they hear of this, they must hate all our family.
Have I offended the General?
I know of no cause of offence. I have seldom seen him more angry.
Could he have discovered your letter from Mr. Lockwood?
No. There was no mention of that.
Don't be unhappy, Eleanor. An engagement must be kept. I am only sorry it was not recollected sooner that I might have written home.
Journey of that distance, forced on you with no explanation. I shall never forgive myself.
I can be ready by 7. Let me be called in time.
Yes, Catherine.
Heavily passed the night. Sleep, or repose that deserved the name of sleep, was out of the question. With a mind so occupied in the contemplation of actual and natural evil, the solitude of her situation, the darkness of her chamber, the antiquity of the building were felt and considered without the smallest of emotion.
We are to part then, Eleanor.
I half believe my father would have changed his mind before the morning. How could he remain so cruel?
I am ready to go.
Forgive me for asking, Catherine, but are you provided with money for the journey?
I have not thought of it.
You will need money for the post. Here. Please, you cannot undertake the journey without it.
Oh, it is good of you to think of it. I do not know what I would have done.
Please write to me. Oh, let me know that you are safe at Fullerton. I will not expect more. Send it to me at Lord Longton's, and if you would, under cover to Alice.
No, Eleanor. If you are not allowed to receive my letter, I had better not write. I am sure to get home safe.
I cannot blame you, and I will not ask you again.
When you see your brother, tell him I am sorry I could not say goodbye.
Of course, dearest Catherine.
Oh, Eleanor, I will write to you, I promise.
Catherine progressed from stage to stage, asking directions from the postmasters for the names of the places she was to be conducted to. Her longest delay was at an inn to change horses.
Catherine! Good heavens! Is it you, my love?
Isabella!
This could not have been a happier coincidence if it had been in a novel. Mama and I have left Bath and are on our way home. We have been lamenting this tedious wait.
I cannot stay, Isabella.
But I have so much to say to you. First, you must tell me what you are doing in this desolate place.
I am going home.
Going home? How?
By postchaise.
I thought the Tilneys might have arranged for you to travel in more style. You certainly left with them in a grand enough manner.
We have our own carriage, and I can assure you, my dear, I am amazingly glad to be free of Bath.
I have not leisure to talk now, Isabel.
But I must tell you, I have been quite uneasy about your dear brother. I have not heard from him since he went back to Oxford. I fear there has been some misunderstanding. How solemn you look.
What misunderstanding can there possibly be?
There was somebody at Bath, as you know, who was amazingly disposed to follow me and tease me before you went away.
I know all about that.
Then you know that I refer to Captain Tilney. At any rate, it may be that your brother has taken something amiss.
James has been to see me and told me everything. How could you behave so to him?
Captain Tilney pursued me, though I would have nothing to do with
him. My brother truly loved you. You played with him.
Well, you are a fine one to talk.
What can you mean?
Why, dearest, you flirted outrageously with the younger Mr. Tilney all the time. Many people noticed it. I would have spoken to you about it, but it was not my place. And then there is my poor brother. You led him on to think that you might care for him. I could reproach you for that, but I don't.
You know I never cared for your brother.
You let him believe you did.
I did no such thing.
Why should we quarrel? We both know that such flirtations will occur. It is men who take them seriously. I cannot tell you how I missed you when you left Bath. You are my dearest friend.
Goodbye, Isabella.
Goodbye, Catherine. Please speak to James. Only you can make everything as it was between us.
A heroine returning to her native village in all the triumph of recovered reputation and all the dignity of a countess, with three waiting maids in a travelling chaise and four behind her, is an event on which the pen of the contriver may well delight. But my affair is wildly different. I bring back my heroine to her home in solitude and disgrace.
Mama!
Catherine, dear!
Is that you?
Oh, Mama!
It is a very strange business, Catherine. General Tilney must be a very odd sort of man.
Yes, Papa.
My dear, you give yourself a great deal of needless trouble. Depend upon it, it is something not at all worth understanding. Have some more bread, Catherine.
I can allow for his wishing Catherine away when he recollected this engagement, but why not do it civilly?
It is no matter now. You are safe at home, Catherine, and our comfort does not depend upon General Tilney. Do eat, my dear. I know you're hungry.
Perhaps I should write to the General.
No, please don't do that, Papa.
I doubt if you'll get any very rational response. All I can say is, I am glad I did not know of your journey at the time.
Indeed. That would have been very alarming.
Still, there's no great harm done. It's always good for young people to have to exert themselves, and you know you were always a scatterbrained creature. Mm. Now you've been forced to have your wits about you with so much changing of chaises and so forth. It has been a strange acquaintance.
Well, we must live and learn. The next new friends you make, I hope, will be better worth keeping.
No friend can be better than Eleanor.
I dare say you'll meet again sometime or other in the course of a few years.
When did you last hear from James?
He wrote from Oxford. He's not cheerful, but he has settled back there at least.
Oh, I almost forgot. I saw Isabella when we were changing horses.
Did you, dear? That cannot have been very pleasant for you.
No, it was not. But it all seems such a long time ago, though it was only this afternoon.
You should go and rest, dear. I expect you'll be glad to be in your own bed again.
You see, forgetfulness is not merely a property of the old. Young people forget these storms as easily as if they never happened.
The next day, as a further expedient for restoring her spirits, Mrs. Morland suggested that they should call on Mrs. Allen.
It is delightful that you are back, my dear. I know we shall talk of Bath all the time. I talked to Mr. Allen about it, but he has grown tired of the subject. Now, you must tell me everything that happened while you stayed with the Tilneys. Is Northanger a delightful old place?
Yes, Mrs. Allen.
Catherine took us quite by surprise yesterday evening. She travelled all the way by post.
Oh,
we knew nothing of her coming.
How extraordinary. What could have possessed you? Young people had their whims, I suppose.
General Tilney, for some odd fancy or other, all of a sudden grew tired of having her there and and almost turned her out of the house.
No.
Very unfriendly, certainly, but we are so glad she's home.
Why would he do such a thing?
I really cannot say.
Could it have been some kind of fit, do you think?
It was not anything like that.
One does hear of such things, you know. I cannot imagine how anyone could be unkind to you, my dear, for you are never unkind to others. Mr. Allen will be very vexed when he hears of this. Still, it is best not to brood on it. We have some delightful memories of Bath, do we not?
Oh, yes, I shall always remember Bath.
Well, you know, you were quite forlorn at first.
Yes,